Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Life is full of what-ifs, some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hello everybody and welcome to this. It is the infrequent podcast about flying pilot episodes. I'm your host JB and as always I am joined by our three intrepid pilots. So I think I'll just quickly nip around the room. Godders, how are you mate?
Hello JB, I'm all right. I'm not even sure we spoke with the other boys about this, but we did have a little minor pod spin-off, didn't we, on Sunday?
Yes.
When we were both at Wasps together.
Worlds Collide.
Yeah, which was a good day out. Good. Had a good Christmas. And I'm sure we'll find out what everyone's been up to. Clearly, the other boys have probably been doing more flying than I have. But, you know, there you go.
Yeah, well, you're sort of a... You're more of a high flyer now.
That's good.
Maybe. We'll see about that.
Yeah, so... I was lucky enough to have one day in the life of a one-star general, which is basically free booze and hospitality at rugby games. It was absolutely magnificent. Moving on, Parky, how are you?
Yeah, the low flyer.
Under the radar, Parky, that's what we call it.
Come on, do better than that, Parky. Yeah, I'm good.
You good?
Yeah, I've kind of got very little to report. It's sort of the quiet season for me.
Have you done any drone flying?
I did do a little bit of drone flying with my boy. That was all good. Didn't crash it. And I was going to check Dunk out. We had a bit of the old drone that I once learned to fly on, I'm going to dual Mason on.
Yes.
Wow. I think it's going to be very unresponsive to learning, really. But I'm going to see how we get on with Mason. We had to sort of swap some motors around because two of them were not working. But I think we've got one to work. So next time you're not flying,
surprise you. This won't surprise you in that, you know, we arranged this. Now, I was calling him for weeks. He said, "Oh, come on by." I said, "Oh, yeah, great. That'd be fantastic." So I turned up and he was fixing his Christmas lights. Oh. And he fixed them for about 2 hours and then it ran out of light. And then when he eventually dragged this drone out, he hadn't got it out for about 2 years. None of the engines worked. So we had to change it all. And by that time, it was either too windy, it was raining, we'd run out of light, we couldn't do it.
You know, right. I just interject?
Right.
Mason arrived at 4:30 in December when it was dark, so I may as well fix my Christmas lights because we couldn't fly.
You know, it is lucky that you two are genuine pilots of quite some distinction, because otherwise this talk about drone flying would be so nerdy. It'd be unbelievably geeky.
Do you ever go, Jason?
I haven't yet. I'm afraid that I'd like it too much.
Yeah, I haven't either. I was supposed to when I went round to Parkies, but he hadn't set it up. So.
well, Goddess, how are you getting on with your bad boy? You've been doing
it's currently, weather's too bad down here for drone flying, so it's been in the box over Christmas. I'm thinking of breaking it out soon, though.
Ooh, exciting.
Yeah, I imagine you've got a massive set of rules and regulations that you're here to.
I do, Parkinson, mainly because I live under the Heathrow flight path.
Yeah, and I bet you it's embossed on the front of the big set of rules and regulations in gold lettering, the general.
Yeah. Yes, and I have a flag on the front of the drone.
Well, last but not least, our medium flyer, Duncan Mason. How are you, mate?
I'm good, thanks. I've been whizzing around. I've had a great week this week. I've flown every day.
Wow.
And I didn't think that would happen because I thought the weather was going to put pay to it. But even today, I climbed into the aeroplane, and it was far too windy to fly, so I had to climb out again.
Oh dear.
But it calmed down. I got back in and went later. It was great.
Now, are you going out?
You instructing?
They give the weaker students better continuity, so you know you're doing well.
Yeah, thanks, Parky. I mean, a lot of the boys have said that. To be honest, I'm feeling really quite grateful that I haven't been chopped yet. I mean, after our discussions last time, things have only gone downhill. So I would shout out to Woody on 57 Squadron and all of you boys that really have persevered with my my incompetence throughout this workup. And so thanks very much.
So you're not instructing. You're being instructed to instruct.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm a filthy student at the moment.
So, can I ask, do you refer to your instructors as mates or sir?
I call them my lord. I just think that seems to work better.
My lord.
He makes them call him sir.
Not at all. Well, you know that I've been demoted. We've spoken about this. So, you know, it's all very pally.
Did you have to buy Flight Lieutenant Stripes, or did someone? Oh, did you?
Yeah.
I had an unlimited supply I gave him.
No, but they were white.
But the thing is that I think they cost about 35 pence a metre, whereas for your general stripes, they're about £35,000 for a set.
Because they're in gold.
Do you have any of those ropes which people wear?
No, although there is an interesting, well, vaguely interesting story where when I turned up a station at Lossiemouth, the previous station said, you know, so we had that gold braid on the arm, and he said, yeah, you know, you're definitely a Queen's Equerry. I went, are you sure? He went, yeah, give me a uniform, I'll go and get it sorted when we were doing the handover.
After her horses.
Yeah, so there I am parading around the place, had all my photos done, they're all up around the station, and I've got my gold braid on the Queen's Equerry, and There was a garden party at Holyrood Palace up in Scotland, and all of the equerries are invited. They're in and around Scotland. I didn't get an invite. So I asked one of the team to go and look into it, and it turns out that I wasn't an equerry.
Hang on.
I was parading around for an entire month with lots of gold braid and scrambled egg around the place, and if I'd have been seen by a royal, I'd have been shot like a pheasant.
Oh, wow.
I mean, it would have been quite good to see, but just to explain,
yeah, please do.
Some of the listeners don't know what scrambled egg is, so that those within the Air Force, for senior officers like Godders, when you get to group captain, on the front of your cap, you get sort of some yellowy gold. What would they be? What leaves are they, Godders?
I should probably look. Someone Google it. I should know that.
But they look a bit like someone spilled scrambled egg on the front. So they've always been known as scrambled egg. So that's what Godders is referring to. But the thing is, what I like about that whole conversation is the fact that because Godders didn't get an invite somewhere, which must be bloody unusual, he sent out his men to find out why.
This is 100% true, Mason. And then and the following week, we had our annual formal inspection where the Air Officer Commanding Number 1 Group, Gary Waterfall, was coming up. And we had to burn every photo that was around the station of me on various boards and flight safety things because I was wearing the wrong uniform.
So what qualifies you to wear the ropes? What are they called? What are they actually called?
Are they called egolettes? Egolettes?
It's no good asking any of us. You need to know. None of us vaguely close to it.
So if you are an equerry in certain positions in the military, you're appointed equerry to Her Majesty the Queen.
Sorry, what does you that wear... mean? What was an equerry?
So it's basically your military assistant, but removed in the case of these honorary positions, because she will have an equerry and it will be someone who is there in the royal household. Mm. So these are sort of honorary positions. And then certain outer office staff, so military assistants and so on, two senior officers, two stars and above, will have, you know, one of these on the other arm, I think it is, you know, to demonstrate that they're a part of the staff.
Oh, nice. Oh, there you go. Learn something every day.
Yeah, clearly I've made that all up. So anyone who's listening who knows better than text in the real answer.
Yes.
Yeah, they're quite blingy, aren't they? You know, they're good for fancy dress, I imagine.
Yeah, very important. Very important.
Well,
that's why in movies, any 10 dictators have lots of gold braid all over them.
Yeah. If you want to look like Napoleon, it's brilliant.
Yeah.
Well, God, this is quite short like Napoleon as well, isn't it?
Yeah, 1 foot three.
And also a brilliant man manager, just like Napoleon. Right, yeah. let's get into it. There's an aviation film out soon, boys. I don't know if you're aware of this.
So have we talked about this pod?
Well,
no.
I remember you getting very excited about it.
Very excited about this film.
Oh, Parky, well, you were probably on your fifth tour when the original movie came out, but where were you all when the original Top Gun came out? 1986.
I was on the Phantom OCU when the original came out. So it must have come out the summer of 86, something like
that. Yeah, it was 86, yeah.
Yeah, I was on the Phantom OCU.
And for you guys, on the Phantom, how cool is the F-14? Because I guess the F-14 was, you know, one step up from where you guys were.
Yeah, it was. We used to do, I don't think I did, but every now and again, you know, when you're in Cyprus, you do some dissimilar air combat against, you know, who's ever there. And the boys did some stuff, you know, Phantoms versus the F-14. It's a massive jet. That's what I can,
huge,
you know, I've been up close to the thing. I'm sure we all have. And it's big. I mean, it makes a Phantom look small. Massive beast, but it's definitely one of the coolest looking aircraft, I think. You know, just the way the sort of the tail tapers back, the two fins, the wings seem to sort of sweep, and they kind of, it looks good with the wings forward, back. It's just a mean looking jet, the F-14.
I think,
I agree. Without a doubt, it's a fantastic looking machine.
Yeah, I like it.
Does it have some sort of...
It's that crank that comes at the wing root, I think, that makes it look quite...
Yeah. Very cool.
It does look like it's got some common heritage, doesn't it, with the F-111? I always think that, at least.
Yeah. No doubt it has. Were they both...
I'm sure the F-111 was designed for carriers, but they never took it up, and then they took bits of the F-111 and incorporated it into the F-14, I think.
F-111 was Fairchild Republic, wasn't it?
Yeah. It was. It's different manufacturers.
F-111 was Grumman.
Side-by-side cockpit as well. I know what you mean, but I think, to me, there's almost two ends of the spectrum there. Tomcat looked like it was, you know, if you could dream your best-looking aeroplane, then the Tomcat must be one of them. It's got to be up there. Whereas if you could dream your worst-looking fast jet, then the F-111 probably was as well.
It looked cool.
Like it turned up. It looked like someone, he crashed the nose in on landing and bent it up a bit.
Why they called it the Aardvark.
Almost like they've just got bits of different aircraft and glued them together without much regard for the overall look.
Yeah.
That's what they did for the 117. So where were you, Dunk? You must have been the same as me in the sixth form.
I was at school. I wasn't in sixth form. I was 15 at the time.
Bristol, Doug.
Oh, no. Was it 86 or 87? 86? No, I was 14. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. So 14, just turning 15. My Top Gun, and this is probably why I didn't do very well with girls. Was Top Gun.
Well, we did a mass double date. It was Croydon Cinema. There was about six of us going out with six girls from the local Croydon High Girls School. And it was a double bill of Beverly Hills Cop or Beverly Hills Cop 2 or something like that, and Top Gun. And everyone knew, I think, I can't remember whether, had you, no, 14 I hadn't. So I was due to go next summer to the big...
Had you what?
Been to the officer and aircrew selection day. That's what I mean.
I was very
excited, nudging people, saying, I'm going to do that. And all of my mates and all of those girls saying, don't be ridiculous. No, you don't. No, you won't.
And did you ever succeed in flying the F-14?
Negative. Ghost Rider. The pattern is full.
Looks like they have the last laugh, though.
Yeah. Didn't join the US Navy. Yeah. Correct. What about, were you even born then, JB?
I was two.
Hippin'
so,
so what's your first memory of Top Gun then?
I used to watch it at my friend's house. My friend, would you believe it, a guy called Tom Parry, his father was really into aircraft. And he used to have a little aircraft book. And in it, would you believe it, God, I must have been at least, it was primary school, I remember that. But on the cover of this book was the F-22, which is amazing because everyone thinks the F-22 is really new. But actually, it's something like 25 years old now. Probably older.
Yeah, so it was coming out. Yeah. It was sort of designed same time as Typhoon. So, and they had the YF-22 and YF-23, didn't they? Competition,
yeah.
You know, back in the sort of early mid-90s.
Yeah, and I remember that my friend Tom had the vinyl, okay, of the soundtrack.
Oh, I to waited the danger zone.
Which, by the way, one of the most underrated soundtracks in all of film history.
I thought you said Take My Breath Away was your favourite.
One of.
So, so is everyone excited about the new one?
Do you know?
Oh, yeah.
No, I'm going to say no. I mean, I'm excited to watch airplanes fly, and everyone's watching airplanes. But you know what doesn't do it for me? F-18s.
Oh, really?
They're a bit dull, frankly.
Mm-hmm. I mean, interesting.
Come on, Goddess.
It's
not as cool as an F-16.
It's not.
You know it.
I was just about to say, Parky, never lost to a Hornet in dogfighting.
That's it.
It's because they are, what? Jack of all trades, master of none.
No, it's because they'll always take you high and then try some high alpha hoonyaka, having dumped all their energy. Whereas if you just keep your energy, you're all over them.
Yeah, one awesome sort of back turn, then they bleed their energy and they're without ideas.
Ooh.
I bet there's a lot of Hornet pilots, especially the Navy guys.
There's
a lot of Hornet pilots that are just shouting at their audio material right now. So who has seen, especially the last trailer, actually? I thought the last trailer was better than the first one.
Ooh.
But I've seen it, right, because I'm going to go frame by frame or scene by scene through this one. So the first one, as it opens, mountains, and then an F-14 flies from bottom to top of the screen.
Yeah. But hang on a second. You see, you've missed a bit, Goddess. You can't get away from that classic, I don't know what's making the noise, but is it a gong that goes gong?
Talking about the four-minute trailer.
That sets the scene.
No, the 2 minute 26 trailer I'm watching here.
Okay.
that's us lifting the curtain. Top Gun 2 trailer. Well, it didn't have the dung. That sounds like bad news. Have you ever seen that?
there's some stuff down through some valleys, and then he kind of rolls inverted and pulls.
Yeah, that looks great.
There's a very cool bit, which is canopy to canopy, and that it's very close together, and it doesn't look CGI to me.
Well, so let's talk through this one. Right? So F-14, is that CGI, or are they flying an F-14 in this movie?
They definitely got an F-14 out. I know that for a fact. And I don't know if they flew it, but they were towing one about. And I'd be very surprised if there's any CGI in this. Isn't the whole point of the Top Gun movie that you're going to be watching aeroplanes? There'd be fury if there's CGI.
There's definitely a lot of actual flying in it. There's no doubt about it. If you sort of have a little look around the internet, you see that they fitted the aircraft out. I can't remember how many, you know, cinema quality cameras they managed to put in the jets.
iPhones.
But they did a lot of, it'd be just like your set. Imagine if JB was setting up the cameras in that and they go off and they fly, you know, a 4v4, they'd come back. Oh, no, sorry, I forgot to switch it on.
Sorry about that.
Or it would pause midway. Or
there were no batteries in it. So what? Why is an F-14 in this?
It's not just an F-14.
Does the F-14 actually fly in it?
Yes, so I'm looking at the first part of this, the Top Gun 2 second trailer. The first one came out, which was, just a minute long or so. And this second one, which adds a bit more footage, has got an F-14 flying through with the burners in. I'm looking at the burners right now.
Yeah, it does have an F-14. It opens up with an F-14. It wouldn't surprise me if there was an F-14. Actually, do you know where the only F-14s are left flying?
And it's probably Iran, isn't it?
I can't imagine that they borrowed one from there.
No, exactly. So I have no idea what part of the story that is, unless it's in, because I think it sort of starts off with Tom Cruise being part of some experimental aircraft testing unit, getting called back to Top Gun.
Oh, sorry, is that me playing that? Or is that you?
Can you hear it?
Yes.
Yeah. Is that you, Dunk?
I have a question, right? I mean, you three are all pretty good pilots. How good would you have to be that disruptive and still get called back again? Is there anyone that you know who is that good to be that disruptive and still come back again?
Well, it's interesting you should say that because, you know, I went through this trailer and you know what? So there's a few things that really sort of came out for me.
Anything gets your goat?
when the admiral is saying to Maverick, he's saying, you should be a 2-star admiral by now, but you're a captain. I thought, Parky? No, he shouldn't be a 2-star admiral. But, you know, I did think, you know.
He made it to captain. That's the equivalent of group captain. Parky made it to flight lieutenant.
Right. Is captain the same as group captain?
Yes. He's a full bird captain in this.
No.
Yes. Mate, you've been out. You're outranked by Maverick.
That's a kick in the teeth.
Well, the other thing is that he says your kind is headed for extinction. And again, I thought of Parky.
There's going to be a common theme here, isn't it?
I imagine there might be. Go on, please continue.
No, I haven't got that much more about that. But I tell you, the things that sort of came out from the trailer for me is the things, I don't know whether you noticed them, the common themes that were, do you know in the first one where he said, I'll put the brakes on and he'll fly right by? Mm-hmm. And yes. he would hit the throttle forward to the stop first. It makes a click and then he'd pull back on stick. He wouldn't do it both at the same time.
Explain that in a bit more detail, Dunk.
Well, it's just, you know, to me, I think if you were pulling up as he was, you'd probably pull back at the same time as putting the stick forward. But he seems a little bit binary to me. I'm just saying. He puts the throttle and it slams that against the stop and waits till that's there and then he pulls the stick back.
Well, Dunk, if you'd flown an aircraft
coordinated to me, that's what
if you'd flown an aircraft with a burner, Dunk, you'd know that you have to wait for it to light before you then.
Like he's let it light, brothers. I don't think right in that split second that he's checked whether it's lit. I'm just saying.
Right, so we can talk more about the fact that we can talk more about the fact that they're remaking the original film through this trailer, because the next thing after Maverick walking wistfully out through a door after the F-14. Is the close-in side cockpit of this is a real F-18 in flight with Captain Navy Captain Pete Mitchell Maverick on the side of a strangely coloured F-18. So I don't know whether that's a still, and there he is. He's rolling off down with, and he's got a black fuel tank on. You know why he's got a black fuel tank on?
No, I'd like to know though.
So you know who's Maverick when there's lots of aeroplanes around. That'll be why.
No, what, like the Red Baron painted his plane red?
Yeah, but I think only for the movie.
Oh, right, you know, I'm with you.
Otherwise, there's a load of helmets and masks, and you don't really know who's who.
Yeah, I mean...
clear visors.
That sort of makes sense, actually.
I want to see if I can make the... those... That's it. Can you hear that?
Young. Grim Reaper.
It's like a bell, isn't it?
Yeah, sure. It is like a bell.
It's not dissimilar.
It's like you, Doug.
It's not dissimilar.
It's 35 years of service, which is about half of what Parky did as well, isn't it?
Yeah, that's true.
If I did exactly 35 years, get in!
So I've got more important questions. How much of this flying is actually legal? For instance, how long are you allowed to hug the floor of the desert for at 7 feet?
Now, so have you seen the making of the Top Gun trailer?
No.
Where they've got the camera crew in the desert, and we'll retweet it on the pod. And they are, this jet flies over the top of the camera crew at about 500 knots and probably 15 feet, which is not legal in flying terms. However, if you're in a range and you get cleared to do so, then you'd be, you know, they obviously got that clearance in order to do it for filming.
Now, have any of you guys flown that low at that speed?
Never.
Never.
And why? Is it just a safety thing? There's just no... Oh, sorry. Never, never. Absolutely never.
It's illegal, JB.
Yeah, of course. What a stupid question. Sorry about that. Yeah. I just
I've never flown an aircraft that goes that speed. So,
hey, hang on. I'm sure we might have mentioned this before, but Parky, wasn't there a? It was on Red Flag, wasn't it? One of the F3 boys who imploded one of those chrome caravan trailer things. By flying supersonic over the top at about 100 feet.
That's cool.
Yeah. Was that an F3? Yeah, it could have been.
Yeah, it was an
F3. You were allowed to go supersonic over land, weren't you, there?
So, yeah, in Red Flag, over Nevada, you can go supersonic over land. And that was down to 100
feet. I heard that story, and I don't know who told me it recently, but I thought it was a B-1B.
Ooh. Oh, there's probably lots of people who have flown super.
B-1B.
The F3 was pretty nippy at low level, wasn't it, Parky?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And ridiculously quiet. I think I've said that before. But, yeah, you'd sort of... Yeah, you'd... they had a couple of uncontained rear engine fires, so you ended up having a sort of speed of the day, I seem to recall, which was kind of stopped you. But you could... used to be able to go up to about sort of 750 at low level, which I think is about 1.1 or something. Yeah, it was pretty quick.
That's quite fast, isn't it? And now, speaking of fast,
like a dingbat, didn't it? It just kept. I was holding down at St. Athan and would sit in the back of them when they were doing the test flights when they'd come out the shed, and they had to do a. I think it was a 200 or 250 to 600 knot acceleration, and I can't remember the exact figures, but it was something like every 100 knots was about 5 or 6 seconds, and it didn't slow down. It was 5 or 6 seconds every time. It didn't ever slow down, just kept going.
I think that, I mean, that's the same, definitely F-16 and Typhoon. I remember, did we do a low-level Excel down when we flew together? But it will, because it's suddenly getting more air, almost the acceleration from sort of 300 to 400.
It increases, doesn't it?
From 400 to 500. And then it almost seems faster, 500 to 600. And then eventually, you know, just the drag and everything, it slows a bit. But it's the acceleration increases for a while, which is just seems wrong, but it definitely does.
Interesting.
I know what, when I did that low-level Axel trip in the Typhoon, I felt like, you know, in that James Bond film when he's whizzing around and has to use his watch to shoot the instruments. It's like that.
Moonraker. All of it.
Yeah. You know, so you don't go supersonic and break the speed limit at low level. You have to, you know, you have to pull the throttles back to idle about 100 knots before you get there. And you're forcing your hand forward to trying to pull the throttle back because your head is just pushed into the back of the seat. It's unbelievable.
Now, not to be a real party pooper here, but I want your views on another aspect of this trailer. And that's when the third F-18 goes straight through the middle of the two other F-18s. Do you know the bit that I'm talking about?
Hold that thought, JB. We haven't got there.
Sorry.
Because the next thing I wanted to talk about is, in terms of we're remaking the same film here,
okay,
is after you see Maverick rolling away and demonstrating that he's got a black single fuel tank underneath, caution, he'll probably run out of fuel quite quickly. Mm-hmm. The next one, he's on a bike, on his old bike, riding through the desert with the same old leather jacket on, and he's now stopped in front of a Tomcat on a stick, which I think, I mean, Top Gun's at Fallon now, which is in the desert up near Reno, but I don't know where they filmed it. It could have been at Fallon, it could have been, you know, down at Miramar again, which is now a US Marine Corps base, or it could have even been Navy North Island, but same old stuff.
There's a podcast. I was just having a little look at some of the stuff, because clearly there's a lot of people that are excited about it and putting stuff out. And there's an ex-F-14 driver, I think, who has got the Fighter Pilot podcast over in the States. Ooh. But he's done like a YouTube clip, and he was talking about all those things you just mentioned, Godders, about exactly where that Tomcat was on the stick, exactly where it is, and all of those. Sort
don't
of
tell people something. That they'll go and listen to him. I didn't know they'd done that. I thought we were being original by talking through the talking through the trailer.
I think
what was his answer, Dunk? Where was it?
Do it.
Say again, Parky.
Where was his? Where did he say the F-14 was in, Dunk?
I can't remember off the top of my
head. Oh, crying out.
It's one of the places that God has said.
But then the next frame is an awesome piece of flying footage. Which is, there's obviously, you know, a cinematic camera, probably in a pod, I would have thought, on the wing of an F-18, as the F-18 is banked up at low level and is pulling around, you know, a hill of some sort at low level. And that is a flipping awesome shot. And you can see the vapor coming off the top of the sort of leading edge root extensions on the Hornet. And that looks very cool.
It does look cool, but I think just from those trailers, both of them, the flying scenes, whether it be 15 feet over the desert, the way it's filmed flying over the mountains as he pulls over the top of the ridge over the mountains, all of the cinematography looks epic. So if anyone is in any way a petrol head or in any way just sort of likes those high adrenaline things, it looks like it's definitely going to be a film to go and watch just to see that cinematography, because where else would you get to do that?
Well, they'll be in IMAX as well. So the HD and the fact that you could go and see it, up near main building in London where I work, the Waterloo IMAX has the largest IMAX screen in the world.
Right,
that
thing is enormous.
Yeah, there you go. We're all going to have to go and see it. But clearly, we'll get tickets to the premiere. We'll just speak to Tom.
Could you speak to Tom?
Yeah, I'll try.
As guys that have flown fast jets, when you watch that cinematography, does it remind you of flying?
Yeah, it reminds you of sitting there. The clip that I've just played and stopped, where he's pulling around the hill, then it switches to the cockpit, and it's an over-the-shoulder where he's reversing from left to right quickly at low level. Absolutely flipping reminds you of flying. That's exactly how it is.
Yeah. Here's one then, Godders. You're gonna get to it, but the binary flying that Tom does that Dunk's not so keen on, he then high alpha...
Skull crusher. Yeah, Maverick wouldn't have got through flying training then, over here.
And then the other mate rolls inverted. So it's, they are canopy to canopy. I've just played that through a few times. That is pretty awesome, isn't it? I don't quite know how they've done that. When I first did it, when we did the Reds, when six went upside down, Dunk, and then we all did a barrel roll. We were the right way. He was upside down. Whatever that maneuver was. Mirror roll. I kind of thought it would be like that. I thought that the F-18 would just be inverted and then the guy would be formating on him. But he kind of moves his head up as the other mate rolls upside down very close and above him. I don't quite know how they've done that.
Do you think they've got Blue Angels pilots in there for those bits?
Yeah, but it's... Do you know what I mean? It's who's formating on who would be my question on that one.
I'm really confused by all the things that you've just said then. So why is this difficult? Why is it? Why are you unsure about how it was done?
Because essentially the shot that I'm looking at, you're looking up at... It's a camera that's sort of almost mounted on the floor of the F-18 that's looking up at the sort of chin and through the top of the canopy, so from the floor looking vertically up at the pilot's face, so you can see his mask and everything, he's got his head right back. And above him, you see the F-18 roll inverted and be very close and above him. And that is quite A-level.
Wow. Well, that's quite exciting.
I mean, Dunk, you are an expert on things. How did they do that?
I am an expert.
Isn't it?
No, I don't think it's anything that's not binary at all, is it?
Well,
But
going back to JB's point about, does it remind you of flying? You play that clip between about sort of 26 and 35 seconds on the second trailer, the low level round the road, and they're just filming them going low level through the valleys. Unbelievable. And that's exactly how it is in an aeroplane. So I cannot wait to go and see that in the cinema. The next thing that comes up is clearly always my favourite, a briefing in a hangar.
Yes. I love this, right? So I've been... I'm not military background, but when I've been to places which are of belonging to the UK military, it doesn't often look like that. Like, when you watch things, RAF Uncovered or whatever it is on BBC Two or whatever the show is, they're usually in these 60s brick buildings... and everyone's holding mugs of tea, not in a dimly lit mood hangar.
No, this one that on the second trailer here, they've got to explain the picture I'm looking at. It's obviously, it's the hangar deck on an American carrier. They've got a few jets in the background. There's an F-18 facing the audience and a podium, and then either side of the audience that are crammed in there, which looks like a bunch of pilots and maybe navigators at the front. And then all the flight deck crew behind, because they're wearing the red, yellow, green shirts. There's two Hornets either side with their wings folded, which they would be, down in the hangar, because they fold them before they take them down on the elevator. And clearly some sort of briefing going on. And I they always put trailers together in the wrong order. This is probably before some big mish thing where they go back to, one of those Second World War films where they pull the curtain back and the target today, lads, is Hamburg or something.
Are they likely to be using a PowerPoint there? Or does just no one need to read anything? Because the lighting doesn't seem appropriate.
You wouldn't have a briefing in a hangar, Joe. Now, if you're briefing all of the troops...
Well, not true. That's not true, Goddess. We briefed all of the 2015 big sort of Balbos in the hangar.
Interesting.
It was exactly like you saw on there.
But isn't that because you were on
HMS... in the hangar because you couldn't get everyone in the briefing room?
Yeah. I mean, I was going to say, isn't that because you were on, like, Invincible?
No.
We did
in the hangars.
Oh, hangars on... Sorry, not on a carrier. Because you served on a carrier.
No.
So if the captain of a ship is speaking, you know, in the UK military, they do a... In the UK Navy, they do a... UK Navy? The Royal Navy. They do a thing called a clear lower deck. That is, the captain will be down and they'll have the entire crew in there, or, you know, whoever's not driving the ship or looking out the window. They will speak to them in there. So this might be one of those clips, but it clearly is exactly like the original Top Gun, where they appear to be doing their academics, their lectures, out in the middle of a hangar in the middle of an airfield, which is plainly ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, there's actually...
Are you going to go through every scene, Goddard?
I think he is.
We're halfway through.
Yeah. I just like to contrast this with another clip, which I know Goddard doesn't want me to talk about just yet, out of sequence. But there's a clip when he's with the Admiral. And the Admiral, too, is, unbelievably, sitting in darkness.
It's moody. Was he sweating?
I wonder
Remember
if it's...
we talked about the first Top Gun, where the original captain, you know, who's smoking the cigar inside, is permanently sweaty.
I wonder if the biggest difference between this Top Gun and the latest Top Gun is going to be a change in attitude towards carbon consumption, because there are not very many lights on.
And
well, maybe that's what it is. But equally, I think, God, is that, you know, I'm sure that I thought that was one of the most realistic aspects of Top Gun 1, because the air conditioning never bloody worked on the carrier, so it was always boiling. Everyone was sweating.
Everyone was sweating the whole time. Hey. But the next part of this trailer is...
Sorry, just one last...
No. Just one last question. Key to the movie.
Sorry.
Parky, he's got a plan. He's the general.
There's a strict order.
This is key to the movie. This is—I can't remember what the actor's name is—but he's got a little moustache, just like Goose, and he's called Rooster.
Yeah,
is this Goose's son, by chance?
Oh yes, this has to be Goose's son, doesn't it?
Doesn't it? Yep.
Doesn't he end up with a fight in a minute?
Yeah, there's a bit of a fight, but
I've just seen his binary. I'm going to hit the brakes off my right by again.
It is a bit binary.
You know. You will now think of that. You'll think he is a binary pilot every time you see him.
So I have so many more questions for you now. Okay, so first of all...
Hang on a second, because I want to throw this little grenade in. Because, again, in sort of, you know, looking around the internet at some of the stuff that's on there about the trailers and about the film, what about this? I'm sure that you've seen it. That trailer suggests Iceman may die in the sequel.
What?
Have we seen Iceman? I see. There's a funeral later on, isn't there?
Spoiler alert.
That might be a bit of a red herring, because it's difficult to tell, isn't it? If you see when they're doing some of that combat, I'm not sure whether we've got it to it yet, Goddard. So, you know, stop.
No, it has to be ahead, in order.
But there's definitely a flying through something and a flame out. There's a flame out. They're going to lose one, I think, aren't they?
I think that bit has to be Rooster, Goose's son, flying through a jet wake after him and Tom Cruise have had a fight about him killing his dad by flying through jet wake.
Oh, that's almost certainly it, isn't it?
If
you hadn't been so reckless, my dad could have seen me graduate or some such thing.
Exactly.
That's what that fight's about. Well done, Goddard. That's so obvious.
But wasn't wonderful writing. Again, someone has flown through jet wake.
Yeah.
After we've watched the film, are we going to go through every scene?
Yes.
That's going to be a long podcast.
Yes, it is. Look, I just want to know these...
different podcasts.
I just want to know...
Yeah, 37 different podcasts.
Yeah, I just want to know a few different things here. So first of all, the smoking of the cigars, that happened in the first one. Did you guys serve with anyone who smoked cigars. And back in the day, could you smoke on duty?
Yes.
Yeah, I think you could. And do you know what? There was, we may have mentioned this before.
Jane Pardon.
Yeah, Bill Pixton. Yeah. There is an apocryphal story of Bill Pixton who would have a cigarette because apparently his Jaguar had an ashtray in it.
No, get out of here.
He had a stick on ashtray that he used to put. It was in the Gulf first Gulf War.
He used to have a cigarette on the way back.
That's amazing.
Now, he was a legend, wasn't he, Bill Pixton?
Yeah.
Is still around?
I don't know, actually. I'm sure there's...
Was it drag two seat? Was it one seat?
Bill, if you're listening to the podcast, get in touch, would you?
Yeah, so could you get away with smoking now? Obviously not in your aircraft, but, you know, on a ship or some such thing. Cigars, particularly if you're senior.
Not indoors. You know, you'd have to be back on the quarter deck or something like that. But yeah, you'd be allowed to smoke out the back there.
Surely if the captain
Goddard
wants to have a cigar.
Goddard has a pipe, don't you?
No, so it used to be cigars. The USAF loved cigars. So when I was on exchange over there, it was all about whiskey and cigars.
How cool. Yeah, that's a life.
And that all came from the Vietnam times, you know, and back to Robin Olds and him being one of the big heroes in the United States Air Force. And, you know, pictures of him holding a big cigar after leading a massive mission out of Ubon in Thailand. Yes. Across into Vietnam.
So do the Americans allow you to smoke cigars on their ships, or is it all pretty much not allowed?
No, not allowed. It's just like it is in shops and, you know, your working environment, JB, right now. You know, that all finished about 15, 20 years ago, whenever it was. And so, you know, go and find a little smoking area to do it, if that's what you do.
Do you know what? First they came for the rum. When will it stop?
So you'll be pleased to know, Parky, I'm not going to talk about every single scene because we've all seen the one where he's doing it right now. Maverick's in front of the Admiral, and that's the point that Dunk made earlier about the you're only a captain, not a flight lieutenant.
Right.
What's interesting is...
I thought you were watching a different trailer then.
Do we think Maverick's had some work done?
Yeah.
No.
In fact, the Admiral is nodding. I think he knows. Then it's
it
next
like
summer.
Parky. If
Hey, Parky, what was...
He's a bit leathery.
Parky, what was your last interaction with an admiral?
Hey?
What was your last interaction with an admiral? Have you ever met an admiral?
I never touched him.
Yeah, but he told me.
I've had many interactions. I mean, an admiral, that's pretty senior, isn't it? I don't think I've had any interactions with admirals.
How about you, Mason? Because I know there's nothing but cocktail parties with admirals, but you know, you weren't
my
top
boss
brass.
Is an admiral. I interact with an admiral every day.
Exactly. You, Mason?
No interaction with admirals for me, I'm afraid.
Yeah, sadly, I was robbed by my only chance to interact with an admiral. It prevented me from saying hello to him.
We had to rugby tackle you away from the First Sea Lord because you were going to jump him, and
it's gonna
First
interview.
Sea Lords don't like that sort of stuff. They get spooked.
next time I see him.
Obviously. The next part of the trailer after next summer goes back to, you remember in the first movie where Maverick lost Goose and he had to go out and fill up the aeroplane and, you know, look sad in front of it. He's doing exactly the same thing with the Hornet, obviously, when he's on his big mish.
Yeah, but it's a remake, isn't it? And I think actually I think it's going to be great that there's a nostalgia about the first film, and there's clearly from the trailers some big nods to the first film. There's beach volleyball, and there's, you know, there'll be
some singing.
A plethora of similar scenes, won't there? And they'll be slightly different, but that they'll sort of remake those things.
Some great footage of them taking off. I mean, they did that in the first one. Do you remember that pod underneath looking back as the F-14 was launched? This one has got Tom Cruise in the back of the, obviously a two-seat, but they're pretending it's a single-seat aeroplane, with two big paveway bombs underneath as he goes off on his mish.
Interesting.
I wondered, and this is just, you know, I wondered if they'd put him in the front seat.
No, he's definitely in the back seat.
He's in the back
seat. Unless he went solo, Dunk.
Say again?
Unless he went solo because it's looking backwards at him and there's nobody behind him.
No.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
No, sorry, I don't mean in that scene, but I just wonder if generically at some point during the making they with a pilot in the back, because he is a pilot. You know,
yeah, I wonder. Might have done. I bet you he flies the Mustang on his own.
That's a good point. This is a good point now. The Mustang. I think he owns that Mustang.
He's got one. I think he's got a couple of them.
I know he owns a Mustang, but I think what I'm trying to say is the character of Maverick owns that Mustang.
Of course he does. Flies it out in the desert. So one of the things I wanted to come to here is they've just done so I've stopped the trailer. Parky will be glad to know. We're almost there, Parky.
there's a bunch of
new people. There's Rooster, there's Phoenix, and I've now paused it. And it looks like his call sign is Fanboy.
Yeah.
That doesn't sound like a very cool sign, does it? Fanboy?
Well, it is for the kids, isn't it? You know, Fanboy, computer gaming, yada, yada, yada. I can see that working for the next generation.
Yeah, that's dweeby. Fanboy's dweeby.
And then the next bit is the one that I think, Parker, you were talking...
He's going to end up a one star and he knows all the rules. That's Fanboy.
The next bit is the one that JB is talking about, where obviously they're going, hey... We're up against Maverick, two of us versus one of him. He's mad, isn't he? And he pulls up immediately between them. They're flying almost close formation and he thrashes up between the two of them. I mean, ridiculous move, Millie. They'll just move aside, see him go upwards, pull up and shoot him.
Yeah, well, that's something about this which I didn't like is when he comes through, they automatically roll. Now, you boys correct me, but you would have to make the aeroplane roll, because if you just came through it naturally, you wouldn't react like... Like
no, so, they are reacting to it. Is that sort of natural reaction to a possible collision? And it's one of those things. I think clearly that has to be CGI, because blokes are in close formation. You're not going to fly a Hornet 3 feet from each other up through the middle of them.
They might do.
As long as people are thinking that, JB, then they've done their job, haven't they?
And you might need...
Then,
yeah, that's fine. Do that.
And then we get into Maverick's old hangar with his Mustang in there. Now, Parky, have you flown a Mustang?
No.
Oh, mate. I would have thought out of all of us, you'd have been in there. Don't you been in the back seat of one in those modified ones?
Would love to. I'd rather be in the front seat.
Well, what do the boys say about it, Parky? Is it? I think it's reasonably docile to fly, isn't it?
Yeah, I chatted to Jim Schofield, sort of dual checked, about last summer. So I was just talking to him about it. And he said it's definitely a huge cockpit. It's nice. It hasn't got the sort of takeoff acceleration or anything like that of a Spit.
Really?
But when it gets going, that laminar flow wing, it's just really fast. It sort of just holds its speed. It's very heavy in pitch, you know, to do a display. It's a real arm maker, but it's not light and dainty like the Spitfire at all.
Is there a difference between the Merlin engine version and the Allison engine version?
Well, yeah, because the Merlin engine version made the aircraft before. Exactly. It was sort of fairly mediocre. And the Merlin made the aircraft, you know, the combination of the two of that air So it was fantastic aeroplane. But, you know, I've done a similar thing, parking, spoken to people that have flown, because Dave Southwood, who's a test pilot as well, was saying this got a really vicious high-speed stall as well. So it's really easy. It's got a big, wide undercarriage, so takeoff and landing, no problems at all. Really easy to fly, actually. Vicious.
Now, as you know, you guys have all either served or are still serving, how much of your... And of your monthly salary, would you have to put away before you could comfortably afford a Merlin and to operate it on a daily basis? Sorry, a Mustang.
Quite a... What are they? Do you reckon they're a million a pop, like a Spitfire?
Yeah, they are, yeah.
They're cheaper. Mustangs
are a bit cheaper. But not that much. I mean, we're still talking $750,000 or something, aren't we?
And storage? Yeah. I mean, how would
I guess the thing is, you know... Could have been a rich auntie donated it.
Yes, so. I mean,
Kelly McGillis in her will.
Was in the family.
How would you stay current on one if you were a civilian?
Well, you could do.
Could you? I mean, do you just have to get the amount of hours and log that? And does anyone have to check on what you're doing?
Well, if you owned the thing, it would just be like any light aircraft. You could fly, as long as you're getting enough hours to keep your license going, you could fly it once a year. And it would, it would be yours to fly. That might be a bit mental, but it's you can stay current on cheaper aircraft and then jump in the Mustang.
Oh, I see. And in terms of fuel, I mean, how much does it cost to put a Spitfire in the air every time?
Well, you probably burn about 30 gallons by the time you started it. That's probably in about 20 minutes, you burn 25 to 30 gallons, something like that.
Wow.
And,
What's a gallon? 8 litres? What's a litre of Avgas these days?
It's about £1.20, something like that. Pound to £1.20, something like that.
Is it 8 litres a gallon? I thought it was four.
Oh, four. 8 pints. You're right, four.
It's four and a half litres a gallon, isn't it?
So we're talking about, it's about a fiver per gallon.
Yeah.
Is that what you're saying?
And then 20 times...
So 150 quid.
300 quid for 20 minutes flying, something like that.
20 times 5? What did you say that was, Parky?
100 quid.
That's why I flew with navigators, Dunk.
I'm Parky. Sure it's more than that.
All I'm saying is he might be very well paid, but to sink in... $750,000 of capital into a Mustang, plus the flying cost. And he flies every day, from what I can tell. Plus, he's got to keep up his bike. It just doesn't seem likely.
No, but remember, there's the point where he takes the tarpaulin off the bike, so that thing's been in storage for a bit, I reckon.
I bet it starts up like that.
But the next scene, the next scenes is
flying it every day.
Huh?
Why do you think he's flying it every day?
Well, he's definitely flying it quite frequently because, well, these things need to be flown and operated and maintained.
No.
Surely.
No, that's an assumption, Jake.
It is an assumption.
Yeah.
No. Anyway, the next part of it is the cool part because this is where they're in the bar singing. You've seen that bit.
I
freeze framed it on the bar that they're in now, which is obviously completely different to the first one. That was allegedly the Miramar officer's mess. This one, they've mocked up the bar that I was in, called the I Bar on Navy North Island in San Diego. And I was there just before Christmas where we had the big meeting out there. And the bar had, I think I sent you guys a bunch of photos from it, but had all of those model aircraft hanging from the ceiling.
Amazing.
And so they're all in this bar. I mean, there weren't necessarily the windows so they've mocked this one up, but there's hundreds of these little model aeroplanes hanging from the ceiling when they're doing their songs and doing a bit of drinking, which I think is really cool because this bar was awesome when we were in it.
How did you even notice that? It's like for a nanosecond you can see the bar scene, let alone that there's little model aircraft on the roof.
Because my eyes still work, Parky.
Hang on. God, I'm going to send you a picture now because I think I know this bar, weirdly. I think someone sent me a picture of it the other day saying you would love it here.
No, me. I sent that picture from San Diego, and I had no idea until it turned up in that trailer that they sort of tried to recreate it. Bobby North Island.
Wow, that is actually quite cool. That's really cool, actually.
Yeah, which I thought was brilliant. And in fact, the only reason we went there was that the 3-star admiral who was running the meeting that I was in wanted to go because it's a proper fighter pilot, you know, naval aviator type place, even though I think it's been there for years.
How cool. That is rather cool. Well done.
Brilliant. And then the rest of it is rooster fighting. Ooh, I see what you mean, Parky, about the rotation when they're flying opposite each other.
Yeah.
That's good.
Good enough.
Someone has a flame out. There's a coffin. Yes, I like that idea. The coffin and the missing man formation that is Iceman. Mm. I wonder if that's at the beginning of the movie and the reason Maverick...
spoiled it for Brazners.
Surely, though, I kind of wonder if Iceman,
plural.
He's like a policeman.
he's got to make a cameo in it, hasn't he?
Yeah, but have you seen Val Kilmer these days? Well, if they did, they'd have to wheel him on.
Do you think they have to live in the trailer?
He's bloated up a bit, hasn't he?
Yeah. I think he'd come on. It wouldn't be in a trunk. He'd come on one of those mobility scooters. Iceman's having a bad day. These, you know, he's not having a good end of career.
We still have some fairly rotund fighter pilots, though, don't we?
Do we?
Yes. And we'd probably put them away when you go round. Christ, the general's coming. Get all the fellas. Have you all done your fitness test? Yes, sir.
I've got my fitness coming up, actually.
We had a Dutch pilot. One of the, it's a very amusing call signs, I think. But his pilot's call sign was Chubby. it was brilliant. We were doing with the Dutch with the F-16, and the kind of a fairly senior Dutch Minister of Defense kind of came out and visited us, and we were all sort of standing around by one of the jets, and this Wobble, who was actually shot down the MiG-29, he was a major at the time, so he introduced all of us pilots to this sort of Minister for Defense. He said, this guy's called Chubby, and the minister, why is he called Chubby? And Wobble said, because he's fat. And I kind of lost it at that stage. He was like, that's good. Yeah. There you go. Good. It was sort of like you wouldn't see that scene in Top Gun.
Did you say that someone shot down a MiG-29? Did I hear that correctly?
Yeah. Well, it was in the sort of 98, I think.
What happened?
It was they scrambled some. I think it was just a Serbian MiG-29, wasn't it? And The boys were on cap and they got clearance to engage and they shot.
Pretty rare.
Yeah.
Yeah, we had a couple of briefings off a couple of boys who shot some guys down in and around, it was Iraq and Bosnia, when I was out on exchange.
I think...
Fascinating stories about how it happens for real versus, you know, essentially the Top Gun version of things.
Yeah, I think the F-111, just to have a bit of a callback there, has got an air-to-air kill with a bomb. That is a serious comment. In Iraq, I think it was bombing as a helicopter was taking off and struck the helicopter with a bomb. It's either an F-111 or an F-15.
I Strike think Eagle. Something like that happened in Libya as well.
Maybe it's Libya.
Yeah,
and you are correct.
Did F-111s do Iraq? I remember they did the Libyan one.
Oh, hang on. They did strike Libya, but years and years and years before the current Libyan conflict.
It was in the 80s, wasn't it?
Yes, it was.
Yeah, that was El Dorado Canyon, remember?
Yeah.
Maybe it was that one. Maybe it was that one, JB. Maybe
I think it was.
I think you're right. I think you're correct.
Goddess, have you got to the bit in there yet where he's in sort of, I guess, a Top Gun boardroom or briefing room, and another ranking officer says, you know, surprised to see him here again, and he said, yeah, I was surprised to be invited back.
And that's when it's called orders.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the bit where I said, has Maverick had any work done?
Ah, yes. There'd be some good one-liners in there, I think, though, weren't there? Again... I think all of it. I mean, trailers are supposed to sort of whet your appetite, aren't they? But I think there's going to be some really good shouts out. I think as long as people don't take it too seriously, I think The Fly is going to be epic. There'll be a lot of shout outs to the old film. As long as people don't take it too seriously.
I offer a bit of motorbiking and stuff like that and beach volleyball. They go straight into, you know, it's obviously real footage of an F-18 putting out flares. Clearly CGI missile coming at it. But, you know, that in itself looks flipping good, you know, even sort of slowed down on here and an explosion behind it, because it is they're putting that on top of actual footage of a jet putting flares out. And then the last bit in it is Maverick in his weirdly shaped black stealth, but not stealth, spacesuity aeroplane.
Yeah, yes, that is weird. That's really
what
weird.
Is it, Goddard? You know everything. Come on.
I can't tell you.
That for me just gives a slight. Although everything I've just said is going, you know, it's going to be good. You've got to take it with a pinch of salt. I just wonder where they're going with that.
No, because that will be
worrying about that.
Yeah, I agree. There's enough good content, isn't there, with, well, what they do for a day job is an amazing thing. Yeah, and you can jazz that up without going to space.
Yeah.
So yeah, because he's in a sort of a spacey outfit, isn't he, at the end?
Yeah.
Yeah, but I think, so that'll obviously, but, you know, that'll be at the beginning. That's where Maverick's been hiding out all these years on some secret test squadron. Iceman dies, he goes to the funeral, someone says, we need you at Top Gun, he goes to Top Gun, fights, become friends, and they go off on a mission together, and everyone wins.
Okay, I have one last question, and then we'll get on to listener questions, all right?
Yes.
But I feel this is important. There is a fight in the mess. Everyone who you've introduced me to in the RAF is a very nice, reasonable, well-rounded individual. How often do you get a fight in the mess?
Ooh, great question.
Well,
JB, seen a few fights.
JB, if you, you know, the same sort of, squadrons are often like a bit like rugby teams, or they definitely were back in the day. Mm. You know, we've talked about that. Have you ever seen fights at rugby club dues?
Genuinely, other than the fact that I've been punched 2 years in a row at the Broughton Park do, outside of that, I have honestly never seen a fight in my current rugby club. Definitely not my current rugby club. Probably one in my last one in about 20 years of playing.
I've never seen, well, I've witnessed one. I've never been on a squadron where people within the squadron have had a fight. And the only one I've witnessed was F3 blokes, which is what I think Parky knows more about fights than,
lay
than
off
anyone.
Me. Yeah, aggressive. I fight is the... You know, when I think back to the shenanigans that occurred in the mess, it's a bit like Dunk and I. We had a little play fight once, but it was just
fight. You know, I just broke my ankle.
It was a good one, but it was that was a very slippery marble floor. But just it's just sort of lounging around in the bar. That you know that sort of carnage is more my recollection. Not really aggressive fighting. You don't see that. That would be stopped.
Yeah, because I like the idea
by
that,
a one star.
Yeah, I like the idea that one squadron walks in and automatically has an enormous beef with the next squadron.
Oh, mate, there's always beef.
Yeah, I guess.
You know, I Bants with a Z between the squadrons.
Would more be fairly offensive songs. You know, the Phantom Boys had, you know, loads of songs about the Jag Boys and a few about the Harrier Boys, and the Harrier Boys had stuff about, you know, Air Defenders, and it would be just banter and...
You know, and it's still the same these days.
I've definitely seen some fights. You must have been there. Were you there at that huge Harrier field dinner? So it had all three squadrons there.
At Honington?
Yeah. That was a massive fight.
No, but that was a food fight.
Someone pulled Davy Slow's arms out of his sockets. He was just nervous about that.
He's only got little arms like a Tyrannosaurus Rex.
He never found out who it was, but I think it was Matt Vardy. I'm just saying. Sorry.
You know, there was a lot of young men with the testosterone coursing through their veins, you know, at that time.
I seem to remember at Chivenor as well, we had 19 squadron and 92 squadron, and on a Friday night, everyone would stay in the bar, be a lot of booze consumed. And there was a lot of, as you say, Parky, it's not just someone walking up and punching someone in the middle of the face, but there'd definitely be, you know, rugby tackle and then broad, definitely body shots going there. And then the rest of the squadron sort of piling on.
That was roughhousing. And I guess they don't do it anymore, but do you remember there used to be the G-check when you were going through flying training? Someone would shout G-check, leap on top of someone, and then everyone else in the crew room would pile on top.
Sounds reasonable to me. Perfectly reasonable. Let's get to some listener questions then.
All right, we've got a few actually.
We've got loads, really good ones too.
Yeah. So from Fraser Corson, actually, I had a day with Fraser the other day. He is the man with the world record in wingsuit flying in terms of speed. He used to work with him down at Abbey Wood.
Wow. He works for something.
He works for IBM now. But he said, if the RAF did not exist, but you could still fly, which Air Force would it be with and why? Dunk.
Ooh, that is a good question, isn't it? Crikey.
Not to be too controversial, but the Israeli Air Force seems rather a lot of fun.
You know, the thing is that it just is cliche, but the US Air Force has got so much, hasn't it, you know, going for it. It's got so many different types, and it goes and does some pretty wild stuff. I think that would be... that would probably be my first thought, but see what Parky says, and then I'll have a think.
Are you going back to the kind of?
I could see you, Dunk, some sort of French somewhere down south France, flying a Rafale, chilling out. AV would love that. That's what I could see you.
Parky. The flaw in that one is Dunk has been married to a French woman for 20 years and still doesn't know a word of French.
Yeah, that's true.
I do. je No, I don't know.
Je vais te faire. Yeah, where did that? Yeah, so, I mean, obviously, Goddard and I had a 3-year stint with another Air Force, which is kind of weird. You know, you were the one Brit amongst, and mine was with the Cloggies, the Dutch, in Leeuwarden. And, you know, certainly at the time, the you know, bang on about the F-16, but the role that they flew that jet, it was 50-50 air defence and 50% mud. And so, you know, you did bomb, you went to the range, you did close air support, you did big mission stuff, you did 1v1 doggers, and it was utterly brilliant. And it was just the... you know, it was at a time when we were, you know, Goose Bay, you had to do, I think, 12 trips a year at 100 foot to stay qualled. And they were more liberal with their interpretation of 100 foot, shall we say. And it was an absolute blast flying that jet with the Dutch. So I think mine's an easy one because I just, you know, you look back through rose tinted glasses. But it was a complete blast on exchange with those boys.
Hmm.
All right, you got us.
Yeah, I mean, almost the same as Parky. I'd go, and you mentioned it, Dunk, I'd go straight back to the USAF in a heartbeat. You know, I absolutely love my time over there. Awesome bunch of people. And, you know, it's hard not to be depressed when you come back from such a mighty Air Force, you know, military, really. I think I mentioned on the pod before, but, you know, the day of 9/11, you know, the next day they're flying combat air patrols over every major urban conurbation in the US with what they've got. And that's not just the Air Force, obviously. That's US Marine Corps, that's US Navy, reserves and guard as well. With all of us, we were deployed in Iraq at the time, and Saudi Arabia doing Iraq. So the scale, and, you know, you look at where they've come now in terms of, you know, the... F-35s, F-22s, you know, new bombers coming out. And, you know, the course I was on out in Maxwell not so long ago where they're talking about their missile defense, just amazing, absolutely amazing what they've got. And they know how to use it. You know, they know how their tactics work. They've got red flag where they integrate all of these different things and, you know, just bringing new capabilities online. Flipping amazing, you know, and I'd be over there in you know, the drop of a hat.
Well, we had a guy who did a Dutch F-16 guy, I'd sort of arrived 6 months. He got an exchange, maybe Hill, would that be right, Goddess? But it was basically an F-16 exchange to the USAF. So he's a Dutch F-16 mate, but he just goes to America for 3 years as a Dutch pilot on an American squadron. And he came back just before I left. And I can remember in chatting in the bars, you know, because a lot of it for the Brits, it was to fly another aircraft, like, you know, to fly an F-16 or mention the Rafale, or, you know, there's an F-22 exchange, there's loads of F-18 exchanges. There's a brilliant one in Australia that the boys used to love. I had a mate that flew Willytown, you know, F-18. I remember him coming back and he just loved it. It was brilliant. But for this Dutch guy, it was essentially the same jet. You know, like an MLU F-16 that was flying a Block 50 or something. But he sort of echoed what you said, Goddard. He just said it was awesome flying with the USAF. Every trip, how they did it, it was almost, there was no real difference if you went on ops and how you did it for real. It was just extraordinary. The amount of chaff and flares they could use and missiles and bombs that they would drop and all sorts of stuff that made it, that when they went on ops, it was no big deal kind of thing.
Yeah, 100%. There you go. Good question.
Thanks,
Fraser. Here's one from Matt Griffiths. And I'm going to link this to the next one, depending on what we say, but I know what I'm going to say. Which one former RAF aircraft do you wish you'd had a chance to fly? Parky.
Ooh. Mosquito.
Ooh, nice.
Like it.
Not the why lightning, mosquito? Parky.
Yeah, I mean, just beautiful-looking aircraft, fighter bomber, just the sort of the missing link between the Lancaster and the Spitfire. It's either two Spitfires or half a Lancaster. But you'll probably remember George Dunn, you know, one of our mates on BBMF, and, you know, he did the trips he did. It's something along the lines of 3 hours 45 he did Berlin and back from the UK. To bomb Berlin, and it just extraordinary bit of machinery.
Nice. Are we going to see mosquitoes over here anytime soon, Parky?
I think there is a penciled in Mozzie that's being built in New Zealand that is fragged to come to the UK that Duxford are going to operate, I believe. But you know how precise that is, and you know, but that's what I've heard, which would be awesome.
That would be cool. Dunk.
Well, I would be, I have to say the Mustang. I always wanted to fly the Mustang, and I know we've already mentioned it, but then, so for me, that's definitely what I want. You know, I want to have a go in, but I quite hanker after a Hunter. I hanker after a Hunter.
Oh, I've flown in a Hunter. Have you had a trip?
No. That's, so I'd like to have a go. I've flown in a Nat. Nat was good.
Oh, how was the Nat?
Yeah.
That must have been weird, sitting practically on the ground before you took off, because it's
it's like being in a go-kart. It's just, you know, bizarre.
Was it easy to fly?
Yeah. But, you know, clearly we didn't... I went and flew it just the once. I went and did some formation aerobatics in it, and it was good for that, as you would imagine, being the former... Reds platform, but I was chatting to one of the boys that I fly with now, a guy called Mike Falvey, who did his fast jet training. I think he flew Lightnings initially, and then he went Helos after that for whatever reason. But I think he went through on Nats, and he was saying that the characteristics of it such that were that if it spanned, for instance, that was it. It would never come out of it. You would just you'd put a control input in to stabilize the aircraft so that you could eject cleanly. It wasn't to get it out of the spin; it wouldn't come out. So there's some really interesting sort of.
They do have a decent combat record too, don't they? Operated by India.
Oh yeah, they weren't they?
Yeah, they had some good results. I think, was it a MiG-21 or MiG-15 maybe?
Sneb, was it an air to ground platform with a bit of self defense missiles on? You know, was it Sneb rockets and stuff?
I think they did well air to air, but I could be wrong. You need to look at
certain. Now, are you talking Hunter or Nat, Jamie?
Nat, definitely Nat.
No, Nat. There's one down at North Weald. There's a sort of standard Brit RAF. They have seen that. And apparently this thing's got, I don't know, it's definitely got more thrust. It's kind of like got 10,000 pounds instead of 7,000 pounds of thrust. And it goes like a belt-fed wombat, the bloke was saying. It's awesome.
That's brilliant. To the Hunter. The Hunter, I think, is a beautiful aircraft. You know, again, you could arm that bad boy up, ground attack aircraft. So I think just off the top of my head, those two, you know, one jet, one piston, that's what springs to mind. What about a jet, Parky?
I'd have to be the Harrier. Oh, no, sorry.
He's lying so much. He'd love to have flown a Harrier.
Of course he would.
Do you know, I can't say this, can I? I nearly did. I was going to fly with Miles and it just never happened. You know, when we left the Reds, he went back to the Harrier. And I actually do regret it because, you know, there's bits I remember, you know, banging on and blowing sunshine up your backsides. But, you know, standing on that carrier, and I think you called it the two spot or something or other, and going, yeah, we used to get airborne from here, you know, go off that ski jump and bits. And it's like, what a mental aircraft the Harrier must have been to fly, you know, and especially the early ones, you know, they look freaking difficult to you know, land those bad boys. But, oh, God, I'm almost saying I wanted to fly the Harrier. No, the Lightning, obviously, is my answer.
That was going to be my answer anyway.
I'm very disappointed no one said the original Typhoon. After reading the descriptions of it in, what's his name's book?
Pierre Klosterman's book.
The Big Show.
Yeah. I mean, that to me just seems like such an incredible aircraft.
Well, yeah. I would have picked the Tempest above the original Typhoon.
Am I right in thinking Tempest didn't fight in World War II?
Yeah, he flew the Tempest. It was sort of later on, but it was a typhoon
with the sort of the strength and back end, wasn't it? And sort of a few of the problems ironed out.
Yeah, more manoeuvrable and a bit less spicy.
Hang on, boys. Did it look like that?
It's blurry. You have to put it.
Hang on, put it closer to the camera.
Yeah, that's it.
That's
a Tempest.
Is it? Yeah, you're right then. Tempest it is then. Rather than Typhoon. I thought the Tempest had a radial engine. Was that the Tempest 2? No, that was Tempest 2.
It was a Sabre, wasn't it? A sort of...
sleeve valve engine.
24-cylinder job. It was a bizarre engine.
H-block.
Yeah, there you go.
Well, that's what the Sea Fury's got in it down at the Navy Historic Flight.
Has it?
My choice was the Lightning there. So from Nick Blakehow, you've been tasked by the RAF to lead improvements to the English Electric Lightning, but the budget will only stretch to either more fuel or more weapons. Which do you choose and why? I like that. What would you do, JB?
More fuel or more weapons? I think I'd put a radar in the thing.
It had one.
It had a terrible radar, and the upgrade for it, allegedly, was a whole new weapon system and radar. And that seems to me like the more sensible thing. But, you know, if push comes to shove, probably fuel.
What do you reckon,
boys? They did. Well, they went for those over-wing tanks, do you remember? They weren't underneath, they were on top of the wing. I remember tanking.
Does the one outside 29 Squadron have over-wings on, Parker?
I don't think so. No, it's clean, I think. But I can vividly remember tanking off of Victor, you know, on cue in Simpson Bears, and Bratty, a mate of mine, was on a Lightning with those wing tanks on the last Lightning scramble, actually. But he had we were way up north, he had no fuel to go anywhere. Then he essentially just remained with the tanker the whole time. And I was in a three-bag Phantom, and, you know, we had 3 hours of petrol, so we just stayed, you know, left the tanker and got the Bears, and he landed back at Lucas just to get some more fuel. And, you know, even with those extra fuel tanks on it, it was strapped for gas, that thing. When you were a long way from anywhere, you know, it didn't have a lot of fuel.
Yeah, because they had the belly tank on it too, didn't they? Actually, why do you put weapons on the top of wings rather than below it? Because I remember the Jaguar had sidewinders on the top of the wings.
Yeah, you're right. I don't know whether it's a space thing, a wiring thing, or
a dynamic thing. I'm not sure.
For the Jag, it was extra lift because the sidewinders had those little wings on them.
It probably was. The wings were just too small by the time you put other stuff on it. It was the only space available.
That wasn't the problem for the Lightning, though, because it had nothing under the wings.
How would parking. Did you ever do
the gear was there, wasn't it? It had very long gear that kind of retracted and probably took up a lot of the space where, you know, so you couldn't put anything where the, you know, where the gear was going to go up and down.
Good point. Yeah, that's right, because it had red top and fire streak pinned to the nose, didn't it?
Yeah.
Now, was fire streak the one which couldn't fire at an oncoming enemy, and red top could fire oncoming or behind?
Well, so a lot of those old missiles couldn't fire at something oncoming because you got to have a very sensitive seeker head inside the missile to be able to pick up, because you're just looking at kinetic heating on the front of the, you know, on the leading edge of the wings, and the and the nose is the sort of heat signature you're picking up there.
JB, I don't mean to, you know, blow proverbial sunshine, but I am always astounded at how much you know and retain. Flipping heck, mate. Are those particular types of missiles you can't fire head on? How do you remember that?
I read a lot of internet. A lot of internet.
In fact, well, most of it. So what I think the general consensus there is fuel, right?
Yeah, I'd say fuel.
Right, yeah, I'd say fuel.
Yeah. All right. Probably the last question looking at the time, but this is a good one. I think I've said his name wrong before, but Charlie Lyon, spelt Leon. What would you guys say is the most challenging aspect of flight training for new cadets? That's a good question. Really good question.
Mm. Well, Dunk. You're the expert. Yeah.
Hang on. Before we go to Dunk Parky, so what did you find the most challenging thing when you went through flying training? I know what I did.
I think it was sort of just... You're kind of like, you know, that penny dropping moment where you just kind of click and you start to get ahead. I mean, mine was a T-37 in the States, and in my pilot training out there. And there was lots of rules with the USAF. And, you know, just everything was very instrument departure and doing all of that. And just trying to remember all that. I was 19 at the time, and just there just seemed to be so much stuff and checks and bits and bobs to do. And then eventually... it just kind of clicked. And after that, you know, the various, you know, you moved on to a bit of instrument flying, then you did formation flying, and then I think it was T-38, a bit of navigation. They were all kind of okay when it clicked. But it's that, I'm sure everybody in pilot training has it. There's some sort of, it's either a trip or it's a moment where suddenly you just feel your confidence growing a bit, and you suddenly, what was difficult, suddenly that kind of becomes easier. And, you know, it's maybe a sort of 20-hour stage, something like that for me. It just felt, it seemed impossible, and I kind of thought I was getting the hang of it. That sort of, and it was more sort of just the GH and the general everything about sitting in a jet rather than one specific thing.
So, but you're talking about jets there, because I think the question was about...
Well, no, that's because he went through on T-37, T-38.
That's what I did. That was my basic... That's the first thing I flew down.
Oh, yeah, okay, yeah.
And I know it was the same on the jet problems. I know exactly what you mean. You know, there's a moment where you go... I do remember, because, you know, I'd flown an aeroplane before in terms of a Cessna on my flying scholarship. The new thing that I had never done before was formation flying. You know, and that first time where the instructor demos... you know, a join forward, up and in, and then you're doing a tail chase after that. I'm never going to get this, you know. And it was, I remember thinking, we had that moment, fly an aeroplane around. Well, you could fly the circuits, you could do the instrument flying, you could do the general handling and loops and aero, but then you suddenly get into this new world of formation and then low level navigation and that sort of stuff. I think that's when it starts to get that point or not.
Yeah. What's yours, Dunk?
When you see all the people you take through flying training and stuff, what do you think?
Who, me?
Yeah.
Oh, thank you very much. as you say, people have different problems with different things. But I think, well, for me personally, I think that, and it's along the same lines, I think when I first started doing navigation, it was when it's, you know, airspace and actually just, who have I got to talk to? Do I have to talk to them if I'm going over there? And, you know, am I going to find that particular, you know, turn point that I've looked for? And there's a certain anxiety in that as to, and a sort of, as you said, I guess a lack of confidence. Is this going to work? Am I going to find where I'm supposed to be going? And And again, I think that that clicked. It clicked last week for me, actually. It's taken me about 30 years. But something clicked last week. I think I've got it now. So, but I guess the thing is, you know, when you say I'm the expert at the new boys going through, but I'm not, of course, because I haven't started teaching them yet. So, but I don't suppose much changes. And I think the things that you've both said and I think that I've mentioned probably will be the same now, the same as it was 30 years ago. Those very basic elements of flying and actually just suddenly getting, or maybe it's not even sudden, but getting comfortable with it at some point. And assimilating all those skills to put them together to give you more capacity, I suppose, to do other things.
Yeah, nice. Well, it's just like driving a car, isn't it? At some point, you get it.
Yeah.
Right, well, let's leave it there. Before we go, though, I've just got a quick shout-out to Tony Shannon, who he sent me quite an interesting question, but it's well beyond the scope of this podcast, and we will definitely address it later. Which, what was it called? Something about NATO evaluations, basically.
Oh, yeah.
But
yeah,
I think tactical evaluations, TACEvals.
Yeah, which sounds really cool, but I just don't think we're going to have enough time to do it now in the remaining 30 seconds. So,
There is one more shout-out. Claire Hartley had written down that remind Doug Major he owes the Blakeoid a shout-out.
Ah, yes, I do. So here's a shout out to the Blakeoid then.
Well remembered, Duncan.
Yeah.
And who is Tom Blake?
But those guys, photography for a bicycle ride. So both Claire and Tom for a bicycle ride that I organised late last year. So
Donegan Trust one.
Yeah, it was Donegan Trust. Yeah. So
well done you.
Yeah, well, and well done them. They did a fantastic job. They were brilliant. So a huge shout out to you guys.
Did you give them some cake or had you eaten it all?
Do you know what? There is a little bit of a story behind that because they were camped out taking photos and it had been nice all day. They absolutely chucked down. And we had saved them some cake specially. Sadly, someone came along and either ate it or took it away or binned it. So I do owe both of them some cake.
Oh, what a lovely end to the podcast. Right, well, let's leave it there. Lovely to chat to you three again.
We will have to do it.
Yeah, we're going to have to get right together and do one in the within the next month, shall we say.
Yeah.
Let's try and get monthly.
No, definitely.
New Year's resolution.
Absolutely monthly podcast. 12 right. This year and a live one.
Perfect.
Well, seven of them are going to be when we've seen Top Gun. So that's we only need to do another four.
Parky, with your contacts in the flight to get tickets to the premiere.
Yeah, no problem.
It'll be ironic, wouldn't it, if this is the only premiere that you can't get tickets to, Godders. Anyway, enough. You can find us at Pilot Episodes Pod on Twitter. You can find me at JBid. Or you can find Godders at... What are you, Godders? Godders Twit.
Godders Twit.
Godders Twit. And is it Major Dunk? Dunk Major.
Doug Major 222.
Doug Major
222. Doug Major 222. And go. People always have a go at me for leaving Lego Parky out. And yeah. I think they think it's because Lego Parky is Parky. But clearly, I'm more than happy to keep Lego Parky in the gang. But
Parky, if we talk to Lego Parky for you and he gives you the login, will you assume the actual Lego Parky Twitter account so you can be on Twitter?
I haven't really got any idea what you're talking about. I got an Instagram account the other day.
So, have you? Lots of selfies with filters on.
No, I'm more than happy to take on Lego Parky.
There we go.
Ooh.
Excellent.
All right. Right. Lego Parky, get in touch.
Thank you for subscribing. Thank you for listening. Leave a review if you want. Get in contact with us on Twitter. But until next time, from me, Dunk, Godders, and Parky, see you soon. Bye-bye.
Bye
bye.
Bye now.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.